black, proud, independent, determined, educated, resilient, compassionate, batty, funny, quirky, unique, creative, thoughtful, sincere, loyal, gutsy, vibrant, resourceful, imaginative, engaging, fabulous, awesome. Those are all words that describe me, the Brick City Brown Chick. Welcome to my podcast, What I Know Now. Thanks for listening.
You say you're going to burn before you mellow. I'll be the one to burn you. Why'd you have to go and pick me when you knew that we were different completely? Welcome back, everyone. This is What I Know Now. I am your host, Brick City Brown Chick, and this is episode 14, The One That Got Away. First things first, I did change my hair. It was time to do something a little different. This will be around for probably half a dozen episodes or so, and then it'll be on to something different. I'm looking forward to the next iteration. I'm doing something I've never done before with my hair, something really special to celebrate my mom's 90th birthday. The party's coming up in about a month and a half or so. So that's going to be cool. So look out for the new mom-inspired hairstyle in a few weeks. The quote from the beginning of the episode is from the 2000 No Doubt song, Ex-Girlfriend. And that is what we are talking about today. Exes and the one that got away. We all have one of these, don't we? At least one. I have one. I know a couple of people who've had two or three. You feel like you found your person and that you're going to be together forever. And then over the course of the relationship, you realize, A, this is not your person. B, you're not meant to be together. And usually C, you really never want to see this person again. But while you were in it, you felt like they were the right person. I'm going to tell this story from my mother's history. She told it to me years ago, and I've always found it very funny. As I've said in earlier episodes, my mother is the oldest of 10 kids, and my grandparents were sharecroppers. Still don't know what that one is. Please Google it. So she grew up in rural North Carolina picking tobacco, because that was the crop that they had. So she did go to school. There's a popular myth that kids in poor black southern states during Jim Crow didn't go to school. She and all her siblings did go to school. But before school and after school and on the weekends, they had chores related to the farm. One of my mother's chores was milking the cows and gathering eggs from chickens. Those were kind of her thing. And if you spend your life doing that from the time you are a very, very young child into your teens, and you realize that farming is not your thing, you want out. And so my mother decided very early in her life, with full support and encouragement from my grandmother, that she was not going to be a farmer's wife. She was not going to live on a farm. That was not going to be the way her future was laid out. So she decided really early in her life that she wanted to go to college. When she was in high school, she was dating a guy whose name she can't remember and she's never told me. So we'll just call him W. She was dating W, and as she got closer to senior year, I guess he was a year ahead of her and already out in the world. And she started talking about, you know, her hopes and her dreams, what she wanted. She wanted to go to college. She wanted to be a school teacher. It was a whole list of things she wanted. And he was very frustrated and offended by this because he thought my mother was the one, even at 16 or 17, which a lot of people did back in those days. And he didn't want any of that. He wanted to be a farmer. He was going to live on a farm. That's what his wife was going to do. So he gave my mother an ultimatum. He told her that she either needed to go off to college and do her thing and they were going to break up, or she was going to give all that up and stay and be his wife, bear his children, and help him take care of the farm. If you know anything about my mother, even just through my stories, you know that she does not take ultimatums at all. And that was definitely not the ultimatum to give her, because she quickly dumped him and went off to college, lived her life. Years later, met my father, had me, had a totally different life than her mother had. So I've always found that story hilarious because he clearly didn't know my mother as well as he thought he did, if he thought her choice was going to be him rather than her future and what she wanted. So this is going to be a pretty humorous episode about my one that got away. And I'm telling this story for all the single women and single men out there who feel like, okay, I had my chance with this person, that was my person, and for whatever reason, it didn't work out. And now here I am alone and single again, and was that my only chance at happiness? So I'm telling this story and hope that other people will share their one that got away stories so that everybody can understand we're not alone. We all go through this. And though the specific circumstances may change, the stories at the end of the day are all pretty similar. Mine started when I was 22, 23 years old. Now you have to forgive the numbers in this story a little bit because this was a very long time ago, more than 30 years at this point. So some of the details are a little fuzzy. Now, some of the details are fuzzy because I blocked them out a long time ago, but the crux to the story is what is important. I had moved to Virginia from New Jersey. For the first 7 or 8 months I lived in Virginia, my aunt was a career military woman. She retired as a brigadier general, and she was over one of the military bases here. So I first lived with her and her husband, my uncle, on a military base. And living on a military base, if you are not a military person and you weren't raised in that life, is a whole different experience. You have to get permission to get on base. When you leave base, you have to let them know how long you're going to be gone. And it was different. And so after a few months, I was definitely ready to go, as I'm sure they were ready for me to go, because they had no children. Even though I was 22, I was not a child. But having that other person in your house when you're not used to that and you're used to your routine is a whole lot. So I thanked them profusely and got my own apartment. So once I got my own apartment, I started to hang out with a friend of mine who we'd gone to college together. She was a year ahead of me. So she'd already been out in the world and doing her thing. And so she had introduced me to some of her friends, and we would go to dinners and hang out and things like that, until I found sort of my own group of friends and my own tribe, I guess we'll call it. Her group of friends, a lot of them were her coworkers. She was a computer scientist type person. So a lot of the people she knew and hung out with were fellow computer scientists or engineers or other folks that worked at her company. So one day, it was a Friday, she had asked me if I wanted to come out to lunch with them. They did this monthly lunch gathering. And I said, sure. So I let my boss know I'd probably be gone more than the standard hour. I'd be gone a couple hours, but I'd make up the time. And I went and hung out with her and her friends. And we went to Chi Chi's. That'll tell you how long ago this was. Chi Chi's doesn't even exist anymore. We went to Chi Chi's and had Mexican food. And we were at this long table. And there were probably 10 or 12 people. And they all knew each other really well. And I was the new person. So people were playing 20 questions with me about, you know, what I was doing and what I was going to do in the world and what my degree was in and all those sorts of questions that you ask people you've just met. And I noticed at the far end of the table was a guy who was listening to the conversation, but not saying practically anything. He would smile and nod periodically, but he really wasn't talkative. So me being me, that made me super curious. And so probably halfway through lunch, I looked down to the end of the table and said, hey, I don't remember your name, but are you going to join in this conversation or are you just hanging out? Which was, I look back on that, it's like, wow, that was super rude. That was the mood I was in. And he smiled and said, yeah, I join in this group, like we have fun together, but I'm not much of a talker in large groups. And then a couple of his coworkers said, yeah, he's the HR guy. So he's the guy who keeps our secrets close to the vest. So we're used to the fact that he doesn't talk much. And after that particular day, I didn't think about it a whole lot. I had a few more lunches with them over the months, and he was always there. But he never said much, so I didn't push it. I grew up a pretty introverted person. I think I'm still introverted, but not nearly as much as I was a child. So I understood that you can't, or at least you shouldn't, push people who want to be on the outskirts but don't want to be in the middle of it. I understood, so I never pushed that. Fast forward probably 5 or 6 months from that original lunch, and my friend came to me and said, hey, you want to come out and have dinner at my parents' house this weekend, doing a barbecue, all this other stuff? I said, sure. And she said, we'll call him LB. She said, LB's going to be there. I said, okay. Just did not put two and two together at that point, which I cut myself some slack for. I went to Catholic school for 12 years. High school was all girls. I had no flirting instincts, no instincts about when a guy liked me or anything like that. So I was like, okay, he's going to be there. Great. And so I went to this barbecue and he got there late. And he bought some food for the party. And I was, you know, off to the side talking to a couple of people. And he walked up to me and said, hey, good to see you again. And I was like, hey, how are you? And the two women I had been talking to at some point in the conversation drifted off. And it just became a conversation between he and I. And that was the first conversation where he was sort of open and willing to talk about himself. And so I found out he had grown up on a farm. His parents were not sharecroppers. He was white. Let me clarify that. That'll help the story make more sense. He was white and he grew up on a farm and he loved farming. It was his passion. He went to school and got his degree in HR so that he could have a day job, so that he could have a steady income. But if it were up to him, he would be a full-time farmer. And I thought that was fascinating because my background with my mother and my uncles and aunts of people who grew up on a farm and couldn't stand it, this was a different perspective. And so we spent a lot of time at that party talking to each other and getting to know each other. And at the end of the party, he left pretty early. And I was talking to my friend and she said, "So what's the deal with the two of you?" And I said, "What do you mean, what's the deal?" And she said, "You really don't get or pick up that he likes you?" And I was like, "Likes me? What is this, fourth grade? Like? I was like, "You gotta be joking." I said, "He's not my type. He's very introverted. He's super shy. He likes his calm, quiet, introspective life." That's all the stuff I got. And I said, "And that's not me." And she said, "Well, you know, opposites attract." I was like, "Opposites attracting is good in theory, but when the rubber meets the road and you come down to life and every day, that doesn't work because I'm going to drive him crazy. And more important, he's going to drive me crazy. And this just isn't going to work." So I didn't give it any thought after that. You push forward a few more months and she and I had lunch together. And at some point during the lunch, she just disappeared, like said she had a work obligation or something. And it ended up being he and I at lunch. And okay, that I knew was a setup. When she said she had to go, I was just like, are you really doing this to me? You're really going to do this? Okay. So he and I finished lunch and he said, "You know, since talking to you at the party, like I've really wanted to, you know, talk to you, be able to hang out with you, get to know you. So can we exchange numbers?" And I suppose that should have been the seed right there that said, "Oh yeah, she's right. He really does like you." But I just chalked it up to, okay, you know, people you gel with and connect with are hard to find. So sure, fine. So we exchanged numbers. And from that point on, we would go out periodically. Now, I don't mean anything like on a regular basis. We didn't see each other weekly. We didn't even see each other monthly, probably. Like every 6 to 8 weeks, either he would call me or I would call him. And we'd have dinner, or we'd go to the movies, or that's pretty much what we did. We went to dinner and movies, and sometimes both. And, you know, periodically my friend would call and go, "Okay, so are you dating? Like, what are you doing?" I'm like, "We're not dating. We're just friends." And she's like, "Okay, you're telling me you're doing this When Harry Met Sally thing?" If you don't understand the When Harry Met Sally reference, Google it. And also watch the movie. It's a great movie. It's one of my all-time favorites. Watch When Harry Met Sally. But I never looked at that initially as dating. Like, we were friends. We were just hanging out. All right, a few months later, we'd gone to dinner or movie or something. And my car was in the shop. So he took me home and kissed me goodnight. And that was the alarm bell. It's like, ding, 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 ding. Oh, okay. We're switching gears here. But what I never got, I guess what I never fully understood, and clearly neither did he, was what we were switching gears to. So my first lesson in what I know now is always ask if you start out in a friendship and you think it's developing into something else. The first thing you need to say is, what are we doing? Because neither of us had any idea. And so over time, our relationship evolved into, okay, we saw each other more often and we would hang out sometimes. And the vibe just became, we're clearly more than friends. That's what came across. But the problem with that was nobody wanted to define it. I was 5 years younger than he is, so I knew he was in a more, I guess you call it, serious phase of his life. And I was 22, 23. I was not in the phase of my life to settle down. And I could probably be in a committed relationship, but I was not in the frame of mind to settle down, get married, all that sort of thing. Or I thought I wasn't. And our relationship remained in, I'll call it limbo, for probably about 6 months. And then I got frustrated and said to him, look, what the heck are we doing? What is this? And he said, well, we're friends. I said, yeah, friends don't kiss. Friends don't make out. That's not a thing. So what exactly are we doing? And it was after that conversation that I called him one day, probably a couple days later, and said, okay, listen, since you don't want to be the person to do this, I will be the person to do this. We're dating. That is what's going on. That's what we're doing. Let's just move forward. Okay, second thing of what I know now, if you, as the woman, have to define what the relationship is, that's not what he wants the relationship to be. So that's another thing I learned through that situation. And so we started dating. And so dating meant we spent more time together. Now it was, we got together every weekend. Like Friday was dinner, Saturday was the movie, Sunday was like mystery day. Like we'd find, you know, festivals to go to or things to hang out at, that sort of thing. And the more interested and curious, I suppose, I got with him, the more he pulled away from me. Now, that would be the third thing of what I know now is, when you lean in and a man leans away, take that for what it means. It means it's not the relationship he wants. It's moving too fast. He's all freaked out, whatever you want to call it. But if you lean in and he backs up, it's time to go. I did not understand that at 22, 23. So I kept leaning in and he kept pulling back. He did not pull back entirely, obviously, but that's kind of the dance we were doing. I would get to points where I would decide, you know what, this is not working. I am not going to continue to waste my time. And it was always at those moments where he would do something sweet. There's a prime example from this that people are going to go, you thought that was sweet, really? One particular weekend, he was going out to the Midwest with his two younger brothers. Their responsibility was to get some new sheep, pigs, goats, some combination of that for their parents' farm. They needed new blood. They needed new animals. So it was their job to go out, go to these auctions and sales and pick new animals and bring them back to their parents' farm. So they were going to be gone Thursday, Friday, Saturday, coming back on Sunday. And then Sunday evening, he was going to come over and we were going to have dinner. Okay, that is what happened. But what he said while we were having dinner was he was thinking about me while he was on the road trip with his brothers. And he was going to bring me back a piglet, a live, actual baby pig, like to let me know he had been thinking of me. Now, everybody I've told this story to in the years since are like, that's what you thought was a sign. And over the few years after it happened, I always thought, what would my life have been like had I ended up with, we're not talking about a Vietnamese potbelly pig. We are talking about an animal that was going to grow up to be a farm pig. So an animal that would end up being 200 to 300 pounds. So over the years since, I thought, what would my life have been like? What would it have like being trying to find an apartment with a pet pig? But I thought that was sweet because I understood that for him, that's how he thought, and that was a big deal. He was not a candy, flowers, romantic notes kind of guy. He was just super practical, and he thought that was practical. Okay, that probably should have been the sign of the beginning of the end. And it was, in a lot of ways, because probably a couple of weeks after that dinner, he called me at work in the middle of my workday, which he literally had never, ever done. He had my work phone number, but he had never called me at work ever. So that was super weird. And he said, I need to send you something. Can I send it to your office? And I was like, send it? What do you mean? And he said, oh, this is the days before email people, so that's what this is. He said, can I fax it to you? All right, I didn't think too much of it. I said, sure. And he faxed me a 3-page, from his perspective, heartfelt note, letter, whatever you want to call it. But he sent me a 3-page fax in which he broke up with me over fax. Now, for you younger people, the only way I can put this is in perspective is if somebody breaks up with you by email, like somebody you've been seeing for months or a year or something like that, instead of facing you because they don't have the guts to do it, they break up with you over email or text. That works too. So he broke up with me by fax in the middle of my workday. So you can only imagine how well that did not go. The letter basically said, I don't remember the details. To sum it up, it basically said, I really care about you, but we are not compatible. And the truth is, you're too good for me. Okay, third thing, from what I know now, when a man says you are too good for him, here's what that actually means. He means, I don't want you. Now, that's a hard thing to hear. It's a hard thing to say, even 30-odd years later. But it's the truth. If a man says, you are too good for me, what he means is, I do not want you. I want someone else, different personality, fill in the blank. But at 23, I did not get that he was saying he didn't want me. All I heard was, he said this wasn't going to work. So me being me, not nearly as mellow as I am now, being 23 and absolutely furious that this man had no balls and would not break up with me in person. That very night, I drove to his condo where he opened the door and I ripped him a new one. I mean, left, right, up, down, sideways. I went off. I was so pissed and so hurt, angry, confused, all these things. And I cursed him out. I did. And I felt so much better when I left. But of course, that didn't last long because I still had to deal with the reality of he had broken up with me when I had thought things were going well, or at least better than he thought they were. And so I sat with that for probably 3 or 4 months before I said, okay, you gotta stop being sad and depressed and, like, you know, my friends giving me their other fish in the sea speeches and all that. And it took 3 or 4 months for me to finally say, okay, you know what? I've just got to move that aside and get back out there and start dating again, which is what happened. And within 7 or 8 months of the breakup, I met the man who would become my husband and who is my husband, my actual person, instead of the person I had thought was my person. Now, what people are always curious about in this story, after, you know, laughing their head off about the facts and the baby pig possibility, is what happened after the fact. What happened after the fact is I was in a relationship with my now husband for probably 7 or 8 months when LB decided to attempt to re-enter my life. And I was past the relationship breakup. And now I was in the mindset of, what the hell do you want? Like, honestly, I am happy. I am living a good life. You didn't want me. I am no longer in your life. So what is it you want from me? And what he said was he wanted us to be friends, like the kinds of friends we had been before we began dating. And I just laughed. I mean, it was the most hilarious thing I had heard in a while, because I thought, there is no going back. Like, first of all, yes, we were friends, but we were always attracted to each other, which I knew at that point. I didn't know at the beginning. And second of all, really don't think the guy I'm currently dating would be all that jazzed about me being friends with you, because you're the immediate ex. You are the guy that when my husband and I first started dating, my husband asked me about my dating history. And I was like, listen, men suck. You suck as a gender. And this is why. And he was kind of like, oh boy. So my poor husband had to make up a lot for the previous ex, which I've since apologized for and know was not fair to him. But what did I know? I was 24 at that point. I really didn't know. And so I just hung up and ended the conversation. And over the next couple of years, I would guess, he would pop up periodically and call me and say, you know, I realize what I did was horrible. I know that now. And I also realize what I lost. And I don't mean our romantic relationship. I mean your friendship. You were a really good friend to me. And I took advantage of that. I did not appreciate it. and I'm sorry. And it took me quite a while to get to the point of like, okay, you know what? Water under the bridge. It is what it is. It happened. That still doesn't mean I want to be friends with you because I don't have that in me. For me, there is no erasing the past. He was very much a person who felt like, okay, yesterday was yesterday, and now I'm on to today. And I thought, that's great. That's not how I work. I can't just say, done. Don't think about it. It's over with. I eventually reached the point where I thought, okay, you know what? We can be on speaking terms. Like, we can email periodically, whatever. Okay, that ebbed and flowed. Because the reality is, I had to accept that he is not someone who learns from his mistakes. That's what I'll say. He is someone who makes mistakes, apologizes for them, repeats the mistake, apologizes for them. And that's something else I know now is, this is a quote attributed to the great Maya Angelou. When someone shows you who they are, believe them. Absolutely true. I had seen over the course of our friendship and our relationship and our post-relationship that he would be all apologetic for something he'd done and then give it 2 weeks or a month or 3 months or whatever, and he'd turn around and do it again and then apologize. So it was just not a healthy relationship for either of us, because it just turned into this dance of, he would do stuff and apologize and I would forgive him, and then he would do stuff and apologize and I would forgive. It just went round and round and round. So I really had to get to a point where I just said, okay, you know what? I'm walking away from this entirely, because this is not healthy for me. And at this point in my life, all I want is things that are healthy and positive. And that's pretty much where our relationship association, I guess I should call it, ended. And I've come to understand over the years that what happened between us, of course, was not all his fault, because I was also young and gullible and naive and fill in the blank. So I was not attuned to the male brain. I was not studious in how men thought or how men worked, because that was not my experience. In college, I dated one guy. I dated him for a year and a half. And then the last 2.5 years of college, I didn't date anybody. So my dating experience was not a long, windy road. So at some point, I had to forgive myself for not knowing better, not seeing the signs, not understanding what was going on. I really did have to let go of that. And that's my biggest lesson in what I know now is, forgive yourself for your mistakes, especially in relationships. Now, if you keep going back, if you keep beating your head against the wall and expecting different results, okay, you've got to come to grips with that. But once you have made the mistakes, understood what the mistakes were, and have moved on, it will make you feel so much better. Because if I hadn't learned the lessons that I learned in that relationship, I wouldn't be able to apply those to the relationship I'm in now. And we are coming up on 29 years together and 25 years married. So obviously the lessons I learned were important, and being able to apply them to my current life and my current relationship have been really helpful. So I will close out by saying, the one that got away you feel like that was your person and who you were meant to be with. But the truth is, your person is still out there. And whether you actively seek them or they actively seek you, things will be better. And you'll look back on that person that got away and say, thank God that's not how my life went. So I hope everybody enjoyed the episode this week. If you enjoyed it or you know someone who will, please pass on the link to my YouTube page. It is youtube.com/BrickCityBrownChick. You can also get this podcast, What I Know Now, anywhere you get your podcast, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, the 15 or so other sites that also carry podcasts. I hope everybody enjoyed this, and I look forward to seeing you next week for episode 15. Bye-bye.